This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
T-minus 6 hours until round one of the NFL draft in 2024 is underway. Welcome in to this special draft day edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. We're live on VSiN and DraftKings Network inside Circa Resort and Casino at the world's largest sports book alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni. And Michael, this is the holiday, right?
Yeah.
This is the day for you and your comrades.
Yeah, this is the big one. I mean, this is when the rubber meets the road. This is when Al Davis used to say to me, at some point, kid, you got to play in the game. Like everybody's got to play in the game, right? And so all the nonsense is over with. All the lying has to come to an end. And you got to declare, you got to show your hand. You got to show who's bluffing, who really has a good hand, who's been splatting the pot like KGB and Rounders, and who really has a plan. And we're going to see these plans take shape. And you're always worried about the teams that don't leak information, the secret sauce, the secret teams that come out of nowhere. You know, like, look, the Chiefs. Nobody thought they would go after Patrick Mahomes. I don't think the Saints thought that they would be involved. Many people didn't think the Saints were involved in Patrick Mahomes. So it's always, if you can keep your circle tight about what you want and what you don't want, then I think clearly that's going to be something you look at.
And to an extent, like, we're seeing a lot of these general managers and scouts and teams keep information close to the vest this year, more so than other years.
I think what's happened in the league is a lot of the teams have eliminated everybody being in part of the decision. I think the scouts have given their information, and then it goes to a group of people that look at that information, they process it, and then the smaller group ends up making the decision. So I think the decision-making group, like, for example, you take New England. I mean, Elliott Wolf will be part of that decision. Jonathan Kraft will be part of that decision. You know, Gerard Mayo will be part of that decision. But the group is smaller, and when you have a smaller group, no less information gets out.
And so with that, you mentioned Elliott Wolf. This is going to be his first time manning the phones. There are a number of people that are going to be new to that chair. I know he's not titled general manager, right, but that's what the role that he'll be in. Is there anything that you remember or like you wish that you knew going into your first draft being that guy?
Yeah, I think what I wish I knew is to stop listening to the noise and just do what you want to do. Do what you are. Do what you rely on, what you know. Don't rely on what someone tells you, because it could be completely wrong. And Elliott's got great experience. He worked for his father. He's been making draft day trades, you know, for a long time. So he understands how to make a trade. He's got good contacts in the league. He can work the phones. And you really have to be anticipatory. You have to be able to anticipate a move of a team and figure out who are they trying to do? What are they trying to do? And not listen to what's been put into your head by people that don't know.
I love this day. It's so much fun. And like I mentioned to you yesterday on the show, seeing like clips that come out later from the war rooms and Monty Austin-Ford, you see later how he's wheeling and dealing to get certain deals done last year with the Texans and the like. It seems like an exhilarating, really, really fun opportunity for whoever is in that spot. We have some, speaking of noise, we have some more news that just came out. Diana Russini reporting that according to her sources, the Rams are trying to make calls and trade up into the top 10. What does that tell you?
Well, that tells me everybody's instincts would be, though, they want a quarterback, right? I don't think that's the case. I don't think you're trying to trade into the top 10 to get a quarterback. I think you would trade into the teens to get, because I don't think they can get up to 4 to get the guy they want. So everybody's first reaction, oh, they must want a quarterback. I don't think that's the case. I think it's a skill player, right? I think it'll be somebody of, could it be the receiver that's left over? I mean, I know they got Puka and I know they got Cooper Kupp, but I think more than anything, it could be, you know, could it be Brock Bowers? Could it be the tight end? I think it's going to be that. I think it's Brock Bowers or a receiver that they really like. If one slips to them, does Odunze slip to 10? Can they get to him? You know, it's always about the skill players for Sean. He's done a good job of fixing his offensive line. What he doesn't have fixed and what's really important to him is that tight end. He doesn't have that to where he wants it at the highest level. And Bowers would give him somebody that he could really, really open up his offense for. And I think that makes the most sense to me when I look it over.
So let's go through the top of the draft here. Yesterday, we did a top 5 edition of what would Michael do. And it wasn't necessarily what you thought was going to happen today, but it was what you would like to do if you were in that chair in the position. And you said 1 through 5, you wanted to go Caleb Williams, J.J. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Joe Alt. You stand by that still today?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think J.C. Latham probably has moved ahead of Ault in a lot of people's minds, maybe not necessarily in my mind, but I do think that that's the case. I think, look, the Chargers need to take an offensive tackle. Whomever they like is the best one. I would take Ault. They're going to take Latham. And I think the rest of it is the case. I mean, like when we get up here to the Giants, nobody has preached more for the Giants to take a quarterback more than I have. I mean, I said it last year. I think there's no question they should. But their offensive line, in fairness to Daniel Jones, who I've been very critical of, they haven't been able to protect at all. I mean, they have not been able to protect him at all. And so, you know, Fuaga, the tackle from Oregon State, to me would fit them. They've got a really good left tackle in Andrew Thomas. But do they have somebody who can play on the other side? It's not Evan Neal. Evan Neal's been a disappointment.
And I do, before we like go down to like beyond 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, for those being the five that you would take, what do you think ultimately the top five will shake out to be?
Oh, I think the top five will be 1 through 4 will be quarterbacks. Okay. I really believe that. I believe it more now than ever. And that's why I don't believe the Rams are trying to get into 10 to get a quarterback, because I think the Rams know by now that Monty's going to sell pick 4. And he's got enough buyers there to get pick 4. And so Monty's going to sell it. And I think with Monty sells it, then that would be J.J. McCarthy, or it could be Drake May. It could be somebody, whoever the last one is. You know, we know it's Caleb. We know it's Daniels. We're not sure whether it's May or McCarthy and May. We're not sure about that. But we're pretty sure it's going to go 1, 2, 3, because the Giants have made every effort to get to the quarterback. The worst case scenario is 4 of the 6 picks at the top. Say nobody trades. Say Monty takes Marvin Harrison. And the Chargers take Latham or all, or say they take Latham, then the Giants are going to take their quarterback there. It could be, and okay. May might make it to him. I doubt it, but he might, because Minnesota's lurking.
Okay.
So I think that's the case. I think 1 through 4 are going to be quarterbacks. 5 will be an offensive lineman, which then if the Giants are stuck here, I think the Giants, knowing Brian Daboll, will want to take Marvin Harrison here. I would take an offensive lineman.
Okay. That's all that we're talking about. Very interesting here. J.C. Latham, again, the new favorite to go number 5 overall to the Chargers at +240. And then, yeah, as you get to 6, if the Giants either are unable to trade up and get their guy, or the 4 primary quarterbacks in this class aren't available, then they're going to have to go elsewhere, whether that be wide receiver or, as you put, Talisa Fuanga, that would go there at 6 from Oregon State. At 7, the Tennessee Titans are on the clock. Who would you have them going with, and what do you think actually happens?
Well, I think they're going to take a wide receiver. I think they'll take Odunze here if he's the last one. If Harrison's there, they'll take him. Or if Neighbor's there, they'll take him. So just put whatever receiver that you want to put in there. But for me, I think they should definitely take I think they should take the tackle Fontua. How do I say
Troy Fautano?
Well, you're good at that. Hard. God, you're good at that. I would take him, you know, but I think they're going to take a skill player. I mean, they just truly believe Brian Callahan through Zach Taylor at the Cincinnati Bengals truly believe that they're going to, you know, they build a team outside in. I don't. I mean, Joe Burrow has been hurt way too much to believe this theory works. But as again, you see certain people on Twitter that are advertising how receivers always pan out, even though they're making it up as they go along. I won't mention who that is, but for some reason, his math is completely wrong. And I tweeted to him yesterday, like, you know, it's the worst position to draft in terms of success ratio. And we've got idiots out there saying they're successful everywhere. I mean, it's just common. But Tennessee's going to take a receiver. They're going to take whatever receiver's left to them. I truly believe that.
Yeah, Brian Callahan, of course, part of that staff that drafted Jamar Chase, you say the outside in. His dad, though, who's the offensive line coach who he hired, believes from the inside out. So it'll see who wins that battle a little bit. Wide receiver +260, if you think that is the play. Offensive line is still a big odds on favorite. The Atlanta Falcons, Chicago Bears, and New York Jets on the clock at 8, 9, 10. What do you have, and what do you foresee actually happening?
I think Byron Murphy will be the pick here at Atlanta. I think it's the right pick. I think this Dallas Turner stuff is just really more of a media hype than anything. Murphy's the best defensive player in the draft. Besides Latua, I think to me, they need a 3 technique. Raheem Morris had Aaron Donald in Los Angeles. He understands the value of a 3 technique as much as anybody, going back to Warren Sapp in the days there. I think that's the pick, and I think that's what they'll do too. I think Murphy's going to go here.
Okay, Bears, a lot of people have put Rome Odunze there. Yeah. You think they go edge?
I think they go edge. I mean, look, you can't be any more clear than Matt Eberflus has said. We need edges, you know, and they've got Montez Sweat, who changed them to defense dramatically. They need an edge. Now, if they can pass this on the physical, I think they'll go with Latua. He's better than Dallas Turner, but they could go with Dallas Turner. Why would they draft Adunze when they have all the money in DJ Moore and they have all the money in Keenan Allen? Like, how much more money do you need in wide receiver? Like, it's not a hockey line, you know? And then when you have three guys that aren't getting the ball, you got a lot of problems. You got three receivers and a rookie quarterback. I think you need to take the defense, and that's what's going to help them win.
Dallas Turner is still the favorite to be the first defensive player off the board. Leatu Latu, second at plus 190. Byron Murphy, who Michael has as the first defensive player off the board, plus 245. And then the Jets. Do we go O-line or do we go Brock Bowers?
I think they're going to go O-line, but I think obviously the Rams think they're going to go Brock Bowers. I have them taking J.C. Latham here. I think to me they would take Alt if he left, if he was here, and that's what typically would happen. But look, the Jets are going to do they need offensive linemen badly. I don't know how they can go through another year as hard as it was for them to fix the line and how they couldn't do anything to me without fixing it this year. And this is the strength of the draft. If you're Joe Douglas, you recognize that if you don't get a tackle here, it's problematic. And these tackles are going to be gone by 20.
And Jets fans, because they've been dogged year after year after year, like, they're not stupid. They want offensive line.
Yeah, they
okay?
do. They
like,
get it.
They don't want another toy. I feel like you have enough weapons now.
Yeah, but there's a prevailing factor going on in the league that you need more skill. You need more skill. When we just watched the Super Bowl with a team that didn't have skill.
True. 100%. Okay, more draft discussion to come after a quick break here on the Lombardi Line. Got to pay the bills. There's been a lot of talk about the quarterbacks in this year's draft, especially at the top. Why this plus money quarterback prop hitting would be historic. We'll tell you what it is when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Not only are we all draft all the time today on the Lombardi Line, but this is going all night long here at VSiN, starting at 6 Eastern with VSiN primetime hosts Tim Murray and Jonathan Von Tobel, as well as special guests Mike Golic Jr. and Mike Golic Sr. as they deep dive into the prospects and predictions for the draft coming up tonight. Stay locked in for a special edition of the GM Shuffle right here at 8 Eastern, where Michael and Femi Abebefe are going to bring you real-time analysis of the first-round picks. Michael's giving out his thoughts on every single draft pick and trade as they happen. Watch the special edition on VSiN, DraftKings Network, and the VSiN YouTube page. Then you can cap off the night with VSiN tonight at 11 action as they wrap up and review all of the first round action and wagers that hit or did not. VSiN.com/draft as well, where you can find all of your NFL draft betting insights. Back here on the Lombardi Line, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, former NFL GM Michael Lombardi on the desk in person in Vegas, which is so awesome to have you here this week.
Good to be here. Yeah, it really is good to be here. It's good to be at the Circa. It's good to watch all this action going on here. Get to watch the 76ers tonight. So it's all good. Yeah.
When you think of the times that you were in the war room, in the office, when all of this stuff is going down on draft day, do you have like a best or worst memory that comes to mind?
I mean, you know, my best memory of the draft was when Coach Walsh told me to go to a chalkboard. And this was 1986. Chalkboards were still the known. And he told me to write three names down on the chalkboard. He said, write Gerald Robinson, defensive end, Auburn. Write John L. Williams, running back, Florida. And write Ronnie Harmon, running back, Iowa. We'll pick one of those three guys when it comes our time to pick. We're four picks away. And the next pick went, Minnesota picked Gerald Robinson from Auburn. Okay. All right. We got two of the three. The next pick, Seattle picked John L. Williams, running back, Florida. Okay, well, now we'll get Ronnie Harmon. The next pick, Buffalo picked Ronnie Harmon, and we were stuck. We were going to pick Larry Roberts from Dothan, Alabama, the University of Alabama's three technique. And we knew he wasn't a first-round pick. So luckily, Gil Brandt called on the phone and made a trade to – we moved back two spots for just a fifth-round pick and still didn't want to pick Roberts there. And then all of a sudden, this momentum just started out of nowhere. And the next thing you know, we traded with Buffalo, and they picked Will Wolford. And then we traded with Detroit, and they picked Gary James. And then we traded the pick outright so they could, so Washington could pick Walter Murray, the wide receiver from Hawaii. And we got next year's one. And then finally, around pick 40-something, we picked Larry Roberts. And then in the third round, we picked Tim McKeyer, Tom Rathman, John Taylor. In the fourth round, we picked Steve Wallace. Then we picked Charles Haley and Kevin Fagan. And the fifth round, we picked this kid that the personnel director, Tony Rosano, wanted to pick, Patrick Miller from Florida. And Walsh didn't really want to pick him because he had been caught smoking marijuana at the combine. This is 86. Marijuana wasn't exactly looked at as a positive drug then. And then in the sixth round, he called me over to the draft board and he said, Michael, who's this kid here? And he points at this kid named Don Griffin from Middle Tennessee State. He said, next pick, we'll pick him. So I rushed to the telephone and I call up Don Griffin and make sure he's alive, because the last time we'd been there was September 29th, 1985. And yeah, I'm alive, man. I'm good. I'm doing good. I'm ready to go. And then we picked him and then it went off. And then there was Brad Dillman in the corner of the room. It's still one of the great memories of all time. You know Brad Dillman? Brad Dillman was a TV actor. He did a lot of sitcoms. He was always in the FBI. Okay. He was a character actor. But he's still alive. He's a huge 49er fan. And Walsh would let him in the draft room because he was a draftnik.
That's great.
And he would bring his draft book and he would bring in his who he wanted to pick. And so we had so many picks that in the 10th round, Coach Walsh said to Brad, Brad, you make the pick. And flips open his briefcase and out comes a piece of paper and he's got it written down on who he wants to pick. And he said, Harold Hallman, a defensive tackle from Auburn. And he describes him and he kind of, I can't say it on the air way he described him, but it was hilarious. And we picked him. And he was an undersized tackle and he never signed with us. He went to Canada, made all Canadian like 5 years in a row. He was one of the best Canadian players ever. And he went up there. And so that draft was really the draft that propelled the Niners to win a bunch of Super Bowls moving forward. And then conversely, I'm in Cleveland in 1995, 96 for the 96 draft. And we had traded up. We traded Metcalf to Atlanta, much to my son Matthew Lombardi's chagrin, because he loved Eric Metcalf. I flipped in the first round and gave them Metcalf, and I went from like 25th up to 9th. And we were going to pick Kyle Brady, the tight end from Penn State. And of course, Rich Kotite of the Jets picked him right before us. And so there's Warren Sapp staring us right in the eye. And Belichick had spent all day with Warren Sapp, and loved Warren Sapp. Like, Belichick's first draft was Russell Maryland. We picked Eric Turner second overall. And Russ, and when you went to Miami, they said, look, just so we're clear, there is no comparison between Sapp and Maryland. Like, Sapp is the greatest three technique we've ever had. And so Art Modell gets a phone call from the league office, Charlie Jackson, saying basically there's a lot of stuff and Sapp's got some off the field issues you're going to have to deal with. And we traded down with the 49ers and we were getting ready to pick either Craig Powell or Curtis Martin. And we took Craig Powell.
But now you're like Pro Football Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champ, Defensive Player of the Year.
I mean, we passed away two Hall of Famers
in one
draft.
But that's because you got bad intel. But that goes back to like what we're talking about today of like who are you believing when you're having all these conversations?
That's exactly right. That night I went home, I told Millie, burn these clothes. I'm never wearing these clothes ever again. Like, that was the disaster. And I knew it at the time. It was a disaster. And so it's just those are the kind of things that springboard you into it. When I was in Philly, I ran one draft in Philly and we were able to come away with a really good draft. But sometimes you just can't duplicate that draft again. You know, you just don't get that lucky. You're always a day late and a dollar short. You know, the next year, 96, we're going to pick Tamrick Vanover in the third round, which ended up being a Pro Bowl returner. And he ends up going the right before us. You just lose out on a player here and there. And it just makes you like, oh, my God. And you get no satisfaction that you were right on the grade, right? You get no satisfaction that you had him right. The only satisfaction you get is when he's on your team making plays for your team.
And for as much control as you have in the moment, taking the person who's available at that time, you don't know how the board's going to fall to you depending on where you pick. And so much is out of your hands and out of your control. Something that you mentioned earlier was how you feel firmly that it's very, very live and possible that we could have history be made today and quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, I think it is. I do. Now, if Arizona doesn't trade down, which I find it hard to believe they wouldn't if they get the right deal, because I think Monty wants to trade down, but we can't trade down until it gets on the clock. We'll know later in the afternoon as this goes. But I do think that. And I think when you saw J.J. McCarthy talk on the Rich Eisen show about how much he spent with the Giants and how much time Drake May. I mean, McCarthy's a lock first rounder. And I think, you know, Penix, who's been making the rounds, I think Penix has been undervalued the whole summer. I think he's been undervalued the whole year. I really think Penix is a really good player. And I don't understand why Penix is. And Bo Nix gets lumped into this, well, Will, you know, he's like Will Levis from last year. No, he's not. Look at his numbers compared to Will. Now, I understand they throw the ball sideways at Oregon. I get that, right? And there's a lot of his percentage of completions way up. But he makes a lot of plays, and he's really good with running with the ball afterwards. And one of the things I know about Sean Payton from his influence with Bill Parcells is you want a quarterback who started a lot of games. One of the pet peeves in terms of evaluating quarterback, you want to see a litany of how many games does he play. Like, if you draft a 24-year-old quarterback, most of the analytical people would say, well, that, you know, you want young. Yes, you want young, but you want experienced a quarterback.
So one of the things that I've heard about Penix, I'm very curious your thoughts on, is that, yes, he's 24, he's mature, so you look at that as a positive. But then there's people that are questioning the time with which it took him to get to the level that he did that final year at Washington, because he had so much time with Kalen DeBoer at his previous stop as well to be familiar with the system. And then it finally clicked, you know, his last 2 years at 23, 24 years old. Is that a problem?
No, I think, to me, like, nobody's a ready-made product. Let's talk Drew Brees. Drew Brees get drafted at the top of the second round at the Chargers, you know, and he lost his starting job to Doug Flutie. And then they drafted Phillip Rivers because they didn't believe that Brees was going to be a good player. And by his fourth year, he became a really good player. And now they had the dilemma. They got Rivers, they got Brees. So Brees went to free agency. It just, sometimes it may happen a little later. And if there's signs that it could happen, see, that's the thing with Daniel Jones. There's no signs that it's going to get better. He hasn't thrown for over 7 yards per attempt. You don't see it. There's no game that can't we get him to do this all the time? Whereas Jared Goff, you say, well, look, you can get Goff is, you see it sometimes. It's not all the time, but you see it enough to feel like, okay, I got it. That's the difference.
Well, and what I say with Daniel Jones, too, is in addition to what you just referenced, in addition to the fumble issues that he has, he also just can't stay healthy. Like, this is multiple years with multiple injuries now.
Right.
And including to your neck.
Right. And the other problem is the fact that, you know, he has to run to be effective. That's one of his strengths, is movement. And if you take that away from him, that's a real problem. Mm-hmm.
Last 30 seconds here, because I know you already like both of these props. I want to know which one you like more. First four picks to be all quarterbacks at plus 150, or six quarterbacks to go at plus 180.
Six quarterbacks to go at plus 180.
Yeah. Okay. It's better value and more realistic with our Michael Lombardi. Got to take a quick timeout on the other side of the break. Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa, will join us live in studio for the final half hour. Why this was the most bet NFL prop at Circa. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you like the Lombardi Line, you're going to love the GM Shuffle. Make sure you download it twice a week, every week, Mondays and Thursday, VSiN.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. Our guy Michael Lombardi giving his unfiltered thoughts and opinions on all of the big picture topics around the National Football League. No better time than this week, with the draft upon us today. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, as we are joined on the desk this draft day by VP of Operations here at Circa, Golden Gate and the D, Mike Palm. And you guys have been busy with draft props this year as well.
Well, we've been busy, but what I heard, you're doing three GM shuffles a week, I heard.
Yeah, it's lately. Tough working for Elliot.
Femi's trying to renegotiate his contract.
Elliot's a demanding guy. Once Purdue went to the final, game, it was like his star just rose. And so, yeah, you know, it's kind of fun because there's so much to talk about. There is no offseason. I'm sure you guys are gearing up for the $1 million contest. I mean,
we just filmed a commercial the last 2 days.
I saw that. And so I think, to me, it's just this. I've been counting the offseason. This is week 11 of the offseason. I think we have 24 weeks to go. But the NFL doesn't sleep. Like tonight, I marvel. I told this to Stormy. The NBA is almost tone deaf. Like, they're putting an NBA game on at 4:30. Like, people are going to watch the draft. What do you think the ratings are going to be for the NBA game compared to the NFL draft?
Well, football is king, and you can't challenge football. You got to find your pockets where football is inactive.
Exactly. Like, you'd have been better off. Yeah. You know, you'd have been better. But obviously, they're going to do that. And I'm going to watch, too, because I'm interested. But this draft phenomena is incredible, as you've seen with the betting market, Mike, and Vegas takes it down, whereas there's still betting going on all over the country.
for us, we're down in Vegas and Iowa, but we're still running in Illinois and Colorado, right? Each state has different rules.
Right, right.
So our final positions aren't set yet. And in Colorado, in fact, we will not. But you can book into the draft. You can keep it open for live betting, which we will not do. We'll take it down.
I would find that dangerous because...
Very dangerous.
Because what I was telling Stormy is because there's so much of secrecy involved that there's only a few people that actually know the picks before the picks are made. And ultimately, sometimes because of television, the picks are made like two or three picks before they're released because of the commercial breaks and all that, that would really put the book at a disadvantage.
That does make me ask you another question, Michael. I was talking earlier today about how I specifically like do not want to be on Twitter today. I want to watch the picks as they happened. I want to feel a little bit of the suspense that we have here. Do you think that because these teams have been holding things closer to the vest that we might have less of those releases?
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said to you before, there used to be when you worked for an NFL team, everybody was able to log into the draft website and then that ticker would come across and 50 people would know, you know, and that's all changed. Now, there's only so many people within an organization that get access to those picks. So they're relying on television. So most of the coaching staffs and scouting staffs are sitting in a room and they're looking at the picks just based on what we're doing. I mean, I can go back to the day where we had Al Locasell sitting over in a chair on a telephone because Al Davis refused to let televisions into the draft room. So literally, we would have to rely on Al Locasell on the telephone to tell us who the pick was. And then, you know, he would get grumpy and cranky sitting in that chair for, you know, for so long. And he could never, I mean, he was worse than I was pronouncing names, right? He was, which takes a lot. Yes. I get that. But he was way worse than I was. And so therefore, you know, who did they pick out? And then he would tell Al Davis's brother, Jerry, spell it. And then Jerry would have to spell it. And it was like translate. I'm like, oh, my God, can we? And finally, I was the first one to bring a computer in. Like there were no computers in the room either. No. And there were no cards, just so we're aware. OK, we had no card. Everything had to be erased every night.
Michael, I know you're tremendously happy in this life you have now, working with this network, working with McAfee, doing your podcast. You're an author. You're involved in the JFK scene. But
yes.
In your former life as an NFL executive, where would you rank this preparing for and executing the draft amongst your job duties in terms of favorite?
I was a draft nick, Mike. I mean, yeah. I started out as a draft nick. I waited in line at the Sheraton to get one of the 500 seats. So I've always been, this is the reason I got into football was because of team building. And so I love this day. But I also love this day. And I learned to understand this day more from Coach Walsh than anybody, because this day isn't when you stop evaluating players or you stop adding to your team. You have to constantly continue to do it. And like anything, you have to add players when no one else is adding them. So I love this day, but I also put it in perspective that like the 49ers, her team, you could have a really bad day like they did in 2022. But if you hit that last pick in the draft with Brock Purdy, you had a great day.
Mike, what are some of your big questions for the draft today that you're most curious about?
I think for me, the curiosity begins at 3 with New England. And where do they sit? Because, you know, Michael and I disagreed on this about how far away they are from being a playoff team or competing for at least to go back to the Super Bowl, which are two different things, right? Do they think they're ready now? And are they going to draft a quarterback at 3? Or are they going to be open for business? And how far down do they want to go? I think that's tremendously interesting. I don't know what you do if you're Arizona. I mean, they need many, many things. But I think the conventional wisdom is it's not going to be a quarterback. That's probably going to be Harrison. And then obviously the Vikings are looking to move up. Where do they move up? Is it going to be the likely spot that the draft favors the Chargers, or do they have to go earlier than that? Are the Giants going to make a deal with New England? I think the Giants are just like, they are as bereft of a quarterback room as anybody, right? I mean,
yeah.
I think Daniel Jones it's over.
It's right? over.
It's
well,
over.
Well, it's not over for $40 million. They right? got to pay him that. I mean, he's going to keep making deposits.
Lots of guaranteed money yeah, next I mean, year.
There's a lot
Taylor
of heisting
their,
going
was
on.
Was their best quarterback the entire year. He gave them the best, and he's across town. So, you know, they're starting over.
They are, which is false in the source. Yeah. How do you take, as an odds maker and a better, how will you take this draft as it relates to the over-under win totals?
Well, that's the biggest thing, right? Most people – most pro bettors aren't really attacking markets till draft day. And this is the key information that we get along with the schedule release.
Right.
Which is huge because you find tough spots in a team's schedule. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they get a favorable schedule with the home and road splits. That is also, that's probably a bigger factor actually than even the draft, unless there's some shocking deal with quarterbacks. Some of it's built into our number already about what we anticipate. Things could be totally different, but we'll see. Now, I actually think this is one of the more interesting drafts that we've had in the last decade, Michael.
Yeah, no question. It is, because there's so many teams. Minnesota, right? Minnesota needs a quarterback. The Giants, who Joe Shane said he's very happy with his quarterback room, which we know is a lie, right? You know, and when you bring Russell Wilson as your first visit, you're not happy with your quarterback room. You know, New England, Washington, Chicago, all these teams that kid. I mean, think about Chicago and the Giants have lied to themselves about their quarterbacking position for how long now? When everybody in the world has been screaming, you need a quarterback. Yet they've ignored it because they knew better than everybody else. So now the act of desperation. And Sean, it's Denver. He walked into that job knowing he needed a quarterback. He wasn't making any bones about it. He just couldn't find the guy that he wanted. And he tried to trade for Sam Howell. He couldn't get him. He's tried to address it. And obviously now he's going to be in a different situation to draft one. Same thing with the Raiders. I mean, the Raiders are going to have to address it, because in spite of what Antonio Pierce said, O'Connell deserves the right to be... There's no evidence of this.
He deserves the right to... He's earned the right. That was what it was. He's earned the right to compete with Gardner Minshew for the starting job.
I don't know that he earned the job at Purdue. Michael, I would be really excited, hopeful from a perspective of a fan or someone who lives here, if the Raiders would go and be able to get Penix at 13. I don't think that's too far a stretch to draft
I don't
him
either.
At 13.
I don't. And that's why I think... That's why as much as nobody wants to believe six are going to go in the first round, I kept saying...
You said a month ago when I asked you six. Solidly.
And so... But to me, the 4.5 prop was a great bet, because all it was going to take was McCarthy, was Penix to go in the first round to get to 5. Because we knew 4 were going to go, even though nobody wants to acknowledge McCarthy's a first round pick.
Well, and that's why, Michael, at that time when Michael Penix Jr. was still a plus money price, that's why I said instead of betting over 4.5 quarterbacks, I'd rather just bet Penix. And now both of those are juiced like crazy at this point. But
how about the who goes first, Penix or next? It could be 12-13.
It could be 12-13.
Right?
It
For
could
real.
Be 12-13. That's right.
I need all the quarterback hype to actually happen, because I have Penix to go in the first round. I bet under 5.5 for J.J. McCarthy. Like I need.
You did that. Is that an emotional hedge for you?
Yes.
She said it would make her sick because he goes top 4.
Because
sick.
I don't believe in, because but this is where we do the separating of like what, just because I think something should or shouldn't happen doesn't mean that's what the other people that are making the decisions think are going to happen. And so I don't mind putting my money on all of the things that we're hearing and things that Michael has told me and his belief in J.J. McCarthy, even though I don't see it. It's not my thing.
Could there be a situation with one of these quarterbacks like Levis last year where it was just the steam was so far wrong?
No, because the Levis steam was coming from was not coming from the league. The Levis steam was coming from the mockers, the Mel Kiper. I never heard the Levis steam coming from the league. Never.
Okay.
And it was coming from Reddit, which is very reliable, as you know.
Of course. We got to hit the break here. We're going to return with Palms Pressing 3 when we come back. A couple great questions today, including one about the San Francisco 49ers you might not expect. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. All the way through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use the code VSIN. New customers that do bet $5 get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code VSIN, V-S-I-N, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, I'm under a lot of pressure here because Steph said they better be three good draft questions today. So, all right, let's start here, Michael. Which franchise that will not select a quarterback with their first pick will do the most to improve their team tonight?
Well, I think a lot of this combines itself with what they've done in the offseason. So my initial reaction would be Philadelphia. If Philly gets a corner, a legitimate man-to-man corner, and I don't think it's Arnold or Kool-Aid. I think it's Mitchell. If they're able to get Mitchell to add to what they've done, they've added 17 players to their roster. They've got a good team. They've signed most of their guys. They're going to probably redo A.J. Brown's contract because he's complaining now with all the TV, with all the money the receivers are getting. They've got a really good team. And so if they get a corner and they don't have to rely on the slowness of Bradbury and the slowness of Slay to play in Vic Fangio's man-to-man defense, they can really take over the East, which I think spells a lot of trouble for the Dallas Cowboys. I think the other team that's under a lot of pressure that could really improve their team is Buffalo. Buffalo can add a skill player, one more receiver that doesn't have to come in and be the driving force to their offense, but can add to their offense with Josh Allen. I think they could really improve their team tremendously. And this is a draft where if you can just, you know, Walsh used to say this all the time, where first year we're going to teach the players the system, the second year we'll develop the skills within the system. And if you're a team like Buffalo, if you can get a receiver to come in and make plays and not have to be the guy carrying the load, it can be a huge, huge help for their team.
Okay, question two, Michael. And this is to get your perspective on the draft class tonight. If you were John Lynch,
yeah,
which quarterbacks in this year's draft class would you trade Brock Purdy straight up to acquire?
None. Zero.
See, this is the question I was waiting for.
None. I wouldn't. And I've said this to people in the league. I've said this to coordinators in the league. I've said this to quarterback coaches in the league. I would have traded for Sam Howell before I would use a quarterback to pick one of these quarterbacks in the first round.
Wow.
I would have traded, and it wouldn't have cost me a lot. I mean, Seattle got a bargain. I thought Sam Howell demonstrated last year incredible toughness to have to go and face what Bieniemy was putting him in terms of all these passes, in terms of the ridiculous protection, in terms of everything that he did, and his ability to throw the ball and move the football. He showed promise more than any of these guys, and he could have come in and played right away. So do I not like anybody here? Well, I like Caleb, but I'm really worried about Caleb. I'm worried about coachability with Caleb. So that worries me there. I would have said Caleb, but Purdy's more coachable. May, risk, okay? May's got a lot of potential, but there's a risk here. I mean, Daniels is a really good player, but when he runs, he runs. Doesn't throw the ball in the middle of the field. Okay, well, is an outside the number throw. So you got to build your team around outside the throwers. Won't throw. Whereas Lamar Jackson throws it in the middle, not good on the outside. And then you go J.J. McCarthy, who I know she was having a heart attack yesterday when I said I would probably take him.
But you like his coachability too.
Because his coachability and because he's not going to be a selfish player and he'll execute the offense. But they all have holes in them. And for what you have to pay and invest in, you're better off with Hal.
I'm glad you say that because last year when I was doing the Fridays with Femi and Pritch and they weren't going to start Howell, they're going to start Brissett, and the line moved in favor of Washington. And I said, what world am I living in that Brissett is better than Howell? I still think Howell's good.
He is.
He got sacked the most interceptions. The first time it's ever occurred in the league that one quarterback endured all that.
Right. And he stood up to it. And not only that is – he also led the league in passing attempts. Like, they never gave the kid any chance to run the ball to protect him.
Let me ask slightly twist this question, and it's a little bit about asking the question, which is the core of these six is the least likely to be a bust, the most bust-proof? Kind of like asking, but in 4 years, how many of these six will be starting for the team that drafts them tonight?
Oh, I'm going to probably say two.
That was our number we came up with this morning.
Well, and I asked him earlier in No Way or No Doubt, like, if Caleb Williams would or would not be the best out of this class. Like, just because he's the number one overall pick, that doesn't mean in the grand scheme of things he's going to be the best player from this batch of six.
He's already behaving like we know he's going to behave. He's already telling the Bears who to draft at the ninth pick. Like, you know, worry about playing first. Don't worry about being the general manager, too. But it goes back to what Brady was saying about how, you know, they're all about themselves. And look, Eberflus knows what he's getting into. Like, they know what they're getting into. They're nervous. Why do you think they sent all their players out to go have dinner with them? They're nervous about them because they've been to Oklahoma. They've been to SC. They've talked to the people on those campuses, right? They know it. It's not generational, okay? It's not generational. I want a piece of the team. I want this. I want that. Like, good luck. Good luck. It ain't going to be your fault if he throws an interception. It ain't going to be his fault if he throws an interception. I can tell you that.
Final question, Michael, and this goes to you, specifically to you and what you did in the league and specific to the draft. Which position do you yourself feel most confident evaluating, and which position other than the quarterback is hardest to evaluate?
For me, it's always the dual position, linebacker, play the run, play coverage. Those are always the hard one. When you have two assignments, you've got to figure it out. Like tight end, block, catch, block, separate. Right. You need two things. Those are always the hardest one. Offensive linemen are easy because they're involved in every single play. For me, it was defensive line. I was always really good at defensive linemen. I had an ability to evaluate defensive linemen. But that was, I think the other hard one is running back, because running back, if you don't understand the runs you run, you can't project the running back. And I've learned this the hard way through watching backs, and you like a back because you're great in production. You're not great in the back. Can he run your runs? Not all backs can run your runs. Like, for example, Derrick Henry. He can't run all the kind of runs. So he has to be deep in the eye, and Lamar's got to be in center. He's not a slot. He's not an offset back in a shotgun, which helps Lamar. That's going to help Lamar be under center more. So I think those two positions. And the hardest one, and the reason it's the hardest, is wide receiver. College wide receivers and pro is dramatically different than a pro wide receiver. Dramatically different. Because one thing, there's press coverage in pro football. There's none in college.
So I guess with that, with wide receivers specifically, like, is that why you think over the last 20 years that that's been the one position that has struggled the most to hit in the first round?
Yeah. So when we were in Cleveland all together, we did a study on this, and we studied it by false positive, false negative. Did the scout give a good grade? The guy didn't turn out. The guy gave a bad grade, and the guy turned out, you know, or he turned out. And usually if you were 74% accurate, you were having a good scout. Now, I know that's a C- in most places, but that's just how hard it is to judge character and all that. And the hardest position to do was wide receiver, because there's not enough tape and people just gravitate towards grading production. Like Adunze is a really good player, but is he going to be able to separate from man coverage? Can he win at the top of the route? Can he separate at the top of the route to get open? It's like people say, well, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is the number one receiver. No, he's not. He's always covered. Keenan Allen is always covered. Now, they make catches and they catch the football, but nobody goes to the stadium saying, oh, my God, how are we going to stop Keenan Allen? They're worried about him. He's going to convert third downs, but nobody's worried about him scoring touchdowns. They're worried about him converting first downs. There's a difference there, and we have such lack of understanding of that through the fans in the league. Oh, we had a guy on the show from The Athletic. I mean, you know, Belichick's going to draft a receiver because he needs a number one receiver. Well, who's a number one receiver? I'll give you another example. They want John Lynch to trade Ayuk for how is he going to replace Ayuk in this draft? Unless he gets either Neighbors or Harrison, he's not replacing him. This guy's better than a Adunze. So why would he trade him for he can't replace him? Remember, Mike, new is not always better.
Michael, I know that you're going to be back on the air with Femi in a couple hours as the draft gets underway. But any like parting words for today's draft for the Lombardi Line audience today?
Well, I think it's so exciting. And I think just don't overreact to the picks. Let's not put them in the Hall of Fame immediately. Can we just like let them become good players and understand the difference between what's good and great?
You mean I don't get to give draft grades tomorrow as soon as we come on the air?
Look, I love that. What I wrote about in VSiN. I mean, I love the fact that they, you know, the Niners, Mike, the Niners got an A- in their draft in 2022. They got an A-, and they listed the reasons because they got four starters, they got three contributors, and they never mentioned that Brock Purdy was the pick, right? And the only player who's playing for him is Brock Purdy.
That draft will just forever haunt my spirit.
Why? Recovered.
Brock Purdy is the reason that John Lynch, I feel like, is still employed right now. If that didn't work out, and this place crumbled.
Kyle Shanahan runs that. I've been saying this for years. Kyle Shanahan runs that building. There's nothing to happen in that building that Kyle Shanahan don't do. John Lynch is a spokesman.
Can you replace Kyle with Mike?
Mike's still involved. Mike's going to be involved. Heck yeah. You want Mike involved.
You're awesome. Appreciate your time. Thank you to Mike Palm. Thank you to Mike Somich for joining us today as well. Don't forget to turn into the special GM shuffle tonight, 8 Eastern. Michael and Femi breaking down every pick and trade as they happen.